ABC Radio Australia.
Now, the Australian government's been accused of secretly abolishing a body that's job has been to evaluate how effective its aid program spending has been. Australia's Labor opposition party made the claim after questions were asked about the body during a parliamentary inquiry on the implications of the COVID-19 pandemic on Australia's foreign affairs, defence and trade. Reporter Marla Damati has been monitoring the inquiry. Firstly, Marla, DFAT were first to give evidence at the inquiry. What else can you tell us about that?
Well, the biggest news out of the hearing was the news that the Office of Development Effectiveness, or the ODE, has been abolished. Now, it was an independent, separate body that essentially evaluated how effective the Australian government's aid program was and assessed the Foreign Affairs Department's internal performance management systems. Now, Julian Hill, who's an opposition Labor MP, asked DFAT officials who were appearing before the committee about it. DFAT officials took a while to answer, with the call going quiet for some time before they answered. And while DFAT's Kathy Klugman didn't say outright that the ODE had been abolished, she described it in this way. There have been some structural adjustments and the ODE is no longer a standalone separate entity. She says the department wanted to get better at the use of data and employ deeper economic analysis to shape Australia's aid program, and says that the people who worked for their office and their expertise still exist and will continue to inform the work that DFAT does. But the Australian opposition has been quick to respond. Shadow Minister for International Development and the Pacific, Pat Conroy, said,
"Australians can no longer be confident that their aid dollars are being spent effectively after the Morrison government secretly abolished a key independent aid evaluation body last month. The ODE has played a critical role in ensuring Australian taxpayers' aid funds are spent wisely and in assessing whether Australia's aid investments are achieving real outcomes and improving the lives of the poorest people in the world."
What it'll mean for the Pacific, it remains to be seen, but of course it's the biggest recipient of aid from Australia. Look, another key point which came out of the hearing is exactly where the money is coming for the Australian government's various COVID-19 support in the Pacific. We've known that the money it's spending isn't new and that it's being redirected or directed from other parts of the aid budget. But DFAT officials were asked specifically where the $80 million will come from that the Australian government has pledged to Gavi's COVAX program that aims to help to ensure that Pacific countries will get a COVID vaccine when there is one. And here's the answer.
The overall redirection has come from essentially two types of programs, those that are not possible, for example, those that rely on travel. A couple of examples in that category are the Australia Awards, their scholarship program, and also our volunteers program.
Because of the COVID-19 pandemic, hundreds of Australian volunteers across the Pacific and the world were repatriated back to Australia, and the programs have also suspended since then, with no new Australians being sent overseas as volunteers.
And debt relief, specifically debt forgiveness in the Pacific, was a key topic in all of this. What were the discussions around this?
That's right. A lot of the NGOs have provided submissions saying that they are concerned that the COVID-19 pandemic will exacerbate or make lower income countries, many of them in the Pacific, more vulnerable to going into more debt. Now, in Oxfam's evidence submission, their concern was the amount of debt that poorer countries will need to take on to deal with the ramifications of COVID-19. In their written submission, they said that many low income countries are already in debt distress or debt risk and have for the last few years had to use an increasing amount of their budgets to make payments to manage their sovereign debt at the cost of improving vital societal functions such as health infrastructure, welfare and education. Now, Senator Conchita Fervorenti-Wells, who is the former Minister for Development and the Pacific, did ask a few questions on debt forgiveness and China's role in budget support in the Pacific. Here's what she put to Oxfam about the issue.
In the broad sense, I know what you talk about, debt cancellation, but how can this be done when regimes like the communist regime in China have engaged in what can only be described as a deliberate debt trap diplomacy over many years, which is now compounded by their BRI strategy. So it's really not in their interest in terms of forgiving debt, because, of course, that keeps those countries well and truly within their influence for whatever reasons the regime wants.
Now, Senator Feveranti-Wells posed a similar question to almost all of the organisations that submitted evidence today. They all had a similar answer, saying that it is a complex situation in the Pacific, but budget assistance and debt forgiveness is incredibly important for Pacific Island nations, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic.
And it appears there's largely agreement on the role that Australia's labour schemes can play for Pacific workers.
Yes, almost all the organisations that fronted the hearing, that's Oxfam, ANU's Development Policy Centre and Save the Children, had recommendations on this very issue. They all spoke about the impact that COVID-19 has had on the Pacific Labour Scheme and seasonal work. Nothing new, really, but the fact that they all highlighted signals the importance of it. The NGO Save the Children recommended that there be consultation to establish a Pacific bubble. Now, this is not just for tourists, but to support workers heading to Australia, which then supports the flow of remittances back into the community. ANU's Dev Poll echoed this sentiment. They made the recommendation that the committee should recognise the importance of labour mobility and migration for the economic success and stability of Australia and partners in the Pacific, and accelerate the movement of people to pre-crisis levels as soon as it is safe to do so. And this was something that the committee members were also quite interested in. Damien Drum, for example, is a local member for the Goulburn Valley in the state of Victoria. His electorate relies on seasonal workers and backpackers, and he says that his region will need seasonal workers to help the upcoming harvest season. He asked ANU's Dev Policy's Richard Curtin if he thinks there are limits on the amount of workers that could come to Australia.
So my electorate is obviously from the Goulburn Valley, which has a huge cohort of seasonal workers that come in to pick fruit every year. It's very, very popular with the workers. When you go around, they are extremely grateful for the opportunity to come over here and to go through the experience. Obviously, gives an opportunity to support their families back home while they're over here. But with the looming crisis that's coming forward, we may need dramatically more seasonal workers. I was just wondering, in your opinion, what do you think would be the upper limit of Pacific Islanders that may be willing to be a part of an expanded seasonal worker program?
That was local member for the Goulburn Valley, Damien Drum's question to Richard Curtin from ANU, who he himself used to work for Australia's Foreign Affairs Department as a labour mobility specialist. Look, Mr. Curtin said that there is actually 4 to 5 times more workers who apply for seasonal worker positions across the Pacific than there are actually positions, although, you know, not all of them would be fit for the job. Now, all submissions also highlighted, though, the hesitation from some Pacific Island governments to send workers over to Australia for seasonal work, and it's because of their ability to deal with COVID-19 if it were to be brought back by returning workers, or repatriated workers from Australia back into the Pacific. And as we reported here, we have had just over 160 workers from Vanuatu who are about to finish their 2 weeks in quarantine before heading out to pick mangoes in the Northern Territory. We have seen the Australian Minister for the Pacific, Alex Hawke, confirmed that they have written to their Pacific counterparts inviting them to rejoin Australia's labour mobility programs with a COVID-safe pathway. So now it appears that we wait for some announcements on that.